Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It is the 27th of August. We have a full house here, and we have a lot to talk about. So, and we have a lot of folks to talk about stuff with. So we'll get started. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Well, good morning. I just, if I can, Joe, would like to take a moment of your time to invite everybody out there in Radio Land to come hear the Berkshire Ramblers on the 31st, which is coming right up.
Saturday.
Thank you, Joe.
Yep.
And coming right up, and we'll be having a good time. And
where are you doing that?
We're doing it. You are so great. We're doing it at the Guthrie Center, which is in Great Barrington in Van Dusenville. It's a wonderful place, historic, dedicated to Woody, and Arlo, of course, built it. And it's a great place. We do this as a we don't take money for this. We just think it's a wonderful opportunity to support a great institution, the Guthrie Center.
And you can find out more information by going to GuthrieCenter.org, GuthrieCenter.org, or give them a call, 413-528-1955.
Bless you, Joe. Do I owe you my
413-528. Yes, no, you're just...
Let us know when that
happens.
You'll
be residual on your non-check from the Guthrie Center. All right. Libby Bost is here. Good morning, investigative...
Good morning.
No, that's Rosemary.
Sorry. All women look alike.
Libby does investigations.
Political consultant Libby Post. Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. Mike Spain is back. And I think you're back for a
yes,
while.
Yes, right. No plans to go away next week or the week after or anytime
soon.
How
many grandchildren?
Eight.
Eight grandchildren, and you divide your time going to visit all of them.
Well, all of them were to visit us, and we were all in North Carolina on the beach. So,
nice.
It was a great week.
Well, it's good to have you back.
And their parents were with them.
Sharks out there?
Pardon me?
Sharks. There have been sharks in North Carolina.
No sightings since June at the beach we were at, so we were good.
Yeah. So, in other words,
did
as of today,
did sharks eat any of your grandchildren? That was so weird, Alan.
You know, that was the next. That
you
was
know,
the next
I was going to go there, and I said, "Don't do that, Alan."
Yeah, I mean,
but you couldn't resist it. Could
I couldn't. No, I just.
So, Mike, you still have seven grand or eight grandkids.
No, all left intact.
Yeah.
With all their limbs, everybody's healthy.
Excellent. J.P. Miller is here. He's from the Empire Report. He is the Empire Report, for God's sakes. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
Wonderful. Good to have you here. And investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And we are set and ready to go. Let's do what we do here and talk about what's going on in the world. We have a lot of stories. Let's begin with the big one, which is I love stories that have nothing to do with the Trump administration. This is the
there
big
aren't any.
Well, I know, but this opioid trial is a big story, and it comes to us from Oklahoma. Isn't that interesting? Johnson & Johnson, a company we have all heard of. I can't think of not using their products at some point, especially when we were children or had children. Oklahoma pursued the first case against a drug manufacturer for the national public health disaster, and the ruling may point to what lies ahead in 2,000 more lawsuits. Johnson & Johnson was ordered to pay $572 million in this landmark opioid trial. Not surprisingly, the news out of Johnson & Johnson world this morning is that they intend to appeal. The amount fell far short of the $17 billion judgment that Oklahoma had sought to pay for addiction treatment, drug courts, and other services. It said it would need over the next 20 years to repair the damage done by the opioid epidemic. Still, the decision heartened lawyers representing states and cities, plaintiffs in many of the more than 2,000 opioid lawsuits pending across the country, who are pursuing a legal strategy similar to Oklahoma's. His finding that Johnson & Johnson had breached the state's public nuisance law, which is a very interesting way that they went about this. A public nuisance law was a significant aspect of his order. It was a harsh assessment of a company that has built its reputation as responsible and family-friendly as makers of soap, baby powder, and, of course, Band-Aids.
The question, of course, is what did you, as always in these cases, what did you know and when did you know it? Same thing with the cigarette companies and everybody else. And how much did you do to mitigate the truth, to do PR that when you knew something else to be the case. And that's where they get got. That's where they always get got.
Yeah, I think a lot of other states are going to be looking at the strategy here, and that's probably why Johnson & Johnson is planning to appeal this, because if this happens across the country, I mean, it could basically put the company out of business. Right now, they got off easy. They only have to pay $572 million. Oklahoma was asking for $17 billion. But that times 50 could really take a toll. And they, I don't know if any of you heard it this morning, the attorney for Johnson & Johnson had an extensive interview on NPR where she was consistently calling it damages. They were seeking these damages and they're wrong, and he kept correcting her. The reporter kept correcting her and saying that they weren't damages. They were to mitigate the costs of taking care of the opioid crisis, according to the judge. And she misstated so many different things and really changed the way that the court ruling was really stated.
And, all right, so it is a Trump story.
Yeah, sorry. Right. I was just about to say she's taking her cues from Trump.
I thought she was artful in the way she was defending was indefensible.
Right. It was impressive to hear her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the fact is, I mean, the attorney general for Oklahoma, who won the case, and he pointed out that one of the advisories to doctors when people were complaining about addiction and problems with these opioids was to prescribe more. That was the advice.
Right. And it was aggressively marketed.
Yeah. And I mean, it was actually fake marketing, deceptive marketing that got them into trouble, which they continue to do now that the case has been lost.
Saying
at this
that
level.
They're safe and effective.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think this was good news. That sounds like a lot to us, $572 million. But the stock price went up as a result
Absolutely.
Of that because so much more was expected. Right. This is not even for 1 year of amelioration of the opioid crisis in one state. So no, I don't think it was good news for consumers.
But Rosemary, it was good news for the company.
Yeah, because they were all going to
the stock went up because it was a tap on the hand. And don't forget, there are a lot of other drug companies which made similar products.
And they're all going to settle now.
Right.
This is what's going to happen. They're going to settle. They're going to
settle. They did already.
And some of them will. I mean, the other cases that are happening, I think what will happen is they'll all go to the table now and settle and say, look, we'll give you $500 million. Leave us alone.
And this was a big – I'm sorry, JP. This is a big deal, too, that because Johnson & Johnson had contracted with poppy growers in Tasmania – to supply 60% of the opiate ingredients that drug companies used for oxycodone,
So
if Johnson & Johnson wasn't selling it, they were also providing 60% of the ingredients to the other companies.
So when you look at it, the half billion dollar fine they got was worth it.
Yes, but
made enough money.
It was significant in that it established that they were responsible.
Yes,
and that will be the basis for other lawsuits or for other settlements, and it will strong arm these companies into, coming up with money to mitigate.
Okay, so we're doing the glass half full, half empty.
Well, you never get everything you look for.
I think the much bigger thing, rather than the money, is the will they discontinue these drugs. There are specific drugs that came out. I remember when I was coming out of college, these drugs came on, and I knew people that got into it. And there are specific drugs. Heroin and opiates have been around for decades and decades. This is a new phenomenon. Will these drug companies stop doing it? And why do they continue to fight this so much in court and spend hundreds of millions of dollars? Because it's so profitable.
The biggest penalty they could get ever been given, and it's a tap on
the wrist.
Go ahead. Well, I'm just going to say, I mean, we can argue about the amount. But the legal work here after the settlements to have the state of Oklahoma be able to pin the blame of the entire crisis onto a company seems pretty significant.
And also, I mean, they're opioids. That's one step removed in the alphabet almost from opium. And if anybody would think that there's not a connection between the two, they're stupid. I had to take this stuff. I've been on oxycodone, an oxycontin for my knee surgeries, and it is addictive, and you have to get off of it. And if you don't have the ability to say, okay, it's enough is enough, which I did after 3 weeks because Lynn said I was in like in La La Land most of the time, right? You know, you get off. You say, okay, enough is enough. And there are people who can, and then there are many, 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 many more who can't. And so these are opioids. This is based from poppy, which is where what opium is made from. Of course this is going to be addictive, and of course they need to be held responsible. I mean, Johnson & Johnson, by paying the farmers in Tanzania to harvest the opium, is sort of like a drug dealer in that kind of subversive way.
Poppy and opium are a gift to mankind to alleviate pain. The real tragedy here is that a medicine that should be uplifting and helping mankind has been so abused, distributed so widely to people who don't use it.
By
that
whom?
It's
by doctors and drug
companies. Well, drug companies and the pharmacies and doctors.
Okay.
There's a whole Washington Post has been outlining.
I want to ask about the doctors. I want to ask about the doctors because the doctors, it seems like we're getting into a gun issue here, where we're saying, you know, it's
drugs
not
don't addict people,
right?
Doctors
doctor,
do
you know, it. It's who's pulling the trigger on this? It's the doctor who prescribes the medication to the patient and sees the immediate results of it and doesn't pull it back. And that is one of the arguments that the company is making.
It's all about money.
Well, and how about the pharmacist who sees the same person coming in and getting
over
100
and
pills
and over
every
over.
Week, every week, and not one person getting 100 and pills
then,
every week. There are 1,000 people every week coming to get 100 pills. You kind of wonder, well, I wonder what all this is going for. Well,
it's a chain. It's a chain. The drug companies hire experts, physicians, to teach other doctors and to spread the word that this is the way to treat pain, and it's okay, it's less addictive, it's a breakthrough. Doctors prescribe them, and pharmacists fulfill the prescriptions. It's a chain. Everybody blames everybody, and it goes back to the manufacturer.
And one other thing, and that is, it was mentioned that there's heroin out there. And, of course, when the opioids began to dry up, the heroin market took off again.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, the thing is this. When, I mean, you know, I had my knee replaced, 7 months ago in November. I'm in the hospital. Right, I'm in the hospital, and I'm like, "Where's the little pumpy thing?" Oh no, you know, with the with whatever it is, the self-medicated with morphine or whatever
morphine
it was.
Drip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh no, we don't do that anymore because it's addictive. I'm like, I'm in the hospital. You know, you see me do this. I'm in the hospital, but then I go home with a nice supply of oxycodone.
Right. It seems to be a contradiction there.
Yeah.
It's a fact that when people have surgery or extreme pain after a medical procedure or an injury, they can't sleep, they can't rest, they can't heal unless there's something about that. And but studies have shown that many people can use a combination of things like aspirin and ibuprofen and Tylenol and many, many people, not everybody, but many, many people. But instead, they just throw OxyContin at them and because it's easy and it's quick and it's had devastating consequences.
It just doesn't seem like that this is rocket science, that you could figure out a way to reserve those really wonderful breakthrough medications for people with terminal cancer and back surgery and knee replacements and the surgeries that actually require it. It should not be as hard as it has turned out to be.
And then there's always the question of where the excess. I mean, I got oxycodone prescribed to me after each back operation, and I never used one. Okay, fair enough.
I did.
Well, okay, but I didn't. I'm not bragging. I just didn't use one. And then, you know, you take them into the police station.
But Alan, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. This, when my sister is a nurse who deals with cancer patients, and she says this, you take the medicine because you need it. That's what it's for. So you have people who are trying not to use it. They're so afraid of addiction that they're dealing with pain.
That's me.
Yeah, that's not the. And this is. I don't think that's doctors or pharmacists. I think that is drug companies. The easy availability of this drug is responsible for doctors who give it out easily and pharmacists who are not looking at huge quantities. It really does go to the drug companies.
And how many deaths have been caused? It's huge.
It is. Huge.
Do you know,
just
Joe?
In Oklahoma, I think it was 4,500 in Oklahoma.
Yeah,
I mean,
where
this was one state, right?
Yeah. But then another 100,000 people addicted because of it. They estimate.
The state said it would need $893 million a year, or about $17 billion over 20 years, to deal with the about 6,000 Oklahomans having died, but then obviously the other effects that you want to take care of. I don't know how you put a price tag on that.
Well, I don't know how the judge ended up with less than a year of actual just money costs. Like, forget the human cost. But this is on the taxpayers. It's not on the drug companies. It's...
Well, as long as the supplies are, as much money as they want to throw at it and educating people, you're in high school, your friend's uncle has some leftover pills, you say, let's try it, and here are the numbers.
I mean, this is incredible. This is just Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma. Between 2015 and 2018, 18 million opioid prescriptions were written in the state. The population of the state, 3.9.
Yeah.
Okay. Since 2000, about 6,000 Oklahomans have died from opioid overdoses.
So let me get this straight, Joe. The 3.9 is what?
How many people are in the state?
Million. Total population of the state. Yeah.
So 18 million prescriptions for a population of just under 4 million.
Just under 6 for everybody.
Yeah. Oh, I see. But 3.9 is the number of
population
people.
Of the
3.9
state.
3.9 million people
3.9
in Oklahoma
million.
And 18 million
I'm so
prescriptions.
Sorry,
right.
3.9, like not quite 4 people in
right.
the state.
Right, right. You know, there was a time when heroin was given out freely for pain back in the 18th century.
Well, there was a time we used leeches, too.
Right,
but
I know. But the thing is
that...
still
use them.
But then heroin became... Obviously, it was an addictive drug. So now we've moved to this, and these are addictive drugs. Why can't we, in science, find a way of creating some kind of painkiller that's not addictive?
Well, we don't believe in science anymore.
The reason why OxyContin is so... deadly, the big thing is that it is way more than an oxycodone in terms of opiates in it, but it has a time release factor. So if you take it orally, you're going to be okay. You're going to have the time release. But the high school and college kids and whoever, they scratch off the time release so that they get all of it right at the same time.
I'm so sorry. I have no idea what you're talking
about. It's a polite way of saying you snort it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that. But how do you scrape off the time release?
They scrape off the outer layer of the pill.
The pill dissolves slowly, but it no longer does when you take that coating off.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
there's nothing.
30 like, seconds.
Just why can't this case mean a change in the way that these drugs are marketed and
what change
mitigate?
Would you have?
Don't let the FDA should stop them from marketing them that way.
Yeah, well, we have to see how much stock all of Trump's people have in Johnson & Johnson and the rest of these companies.
Okay, we don't know anything about that yet.
But
we can't blame Trump for this.
But
this
that
was
will
before
dictate,
he got there. Right?
That will dictate how far the FDA and the government will go.
I have to take a break. All right, good. Okay. Everyone stop for a moment, so I'll seize on that, and we'll take a break. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion. We are back. Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Libby Post. Alan has the letters, and here we go.
And Kevin says, drug settlement. Hi, panel. Doesn't the settlement point the finger at the effect of run-amok capitalism in healthcare? Warm regards. The answer is, well, yeah. Anybody goes into a hospital or to a health facility, you're going to know. That money it takes money to run these places, but also that money becomes primary. Simple. Yeah. Okay, moving right on. And Alan says, opiate issue. Clearly, pharmacies and drug companies shoulder some of the burden, but we can't forget basic psychology. People want to get high. Without such demand, there would not have been a concerted organizational supply. And that's best from Alan.
Well, why don't they just go to your town and get high legally now, Alan? I mean, that's
they can
possible,
go right? on into Great Barrington and get on the line at Theory, which is the dispensary there that does that. Four more are coming to Great Barrington.
That shows your demand, doesn't it?
And we may also have a race course. That is coming.
What will be racing there?
Horses.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason they will be coming is because whoever was running them in Boston lost their lease on their land, whatever that is. I may have this a little bit wrong. So what they're doing now is moving the actual running of the races to Great Barrington. What they're trying to do. there are citizens like myself who are opposed to it. But whether my simple little column can turn the tide, I don't know. No, there are a lot of other people besides me who are objecting to it. Okay, so Alan, without demand, there would not have been a concerted organizational supply, right? And such is.
Yeah, but
the
they created the demand, and they grew the demand.
That's the thing
through
is
marketing.
That's the thing is they created the demand by being prescribed right. This is a safe treatment, and you get someone who wouldn't normally try an illegal drug were prescribed something, and they go at it for a couple of weeks, and they get hooked.
You know, a certain the commercials. Percentage. I mean, why should you suffer chronic pain? Yeah. Blah blah blah. You know.
But you know, this idea of picking out a couple of targets and pointing the finger at it. I'm all for anything Johnson & Johnson has to pay, don't get me wrong. But when I think of things like the news is full this morning of the actresses who used their influence to get the kids into college, mm-hmm. you know, and the phony Maloney stuff. It's unbelievable to me that those people are going to go to jail theoretically for up to 2 years. It's unbelievable.
Well, Martha Stewart went to jail.
Okay, how long in history has this been going on?
I know, but there's not kids dying though from
no,
that.
But,
this,
but no, 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 but
that's an outrage. Right. But there aren't people dying.
No, you're right. But I'm trying to point to a different issue.
The other part of this is that this frames all drug companies as big, bad entities, which fuels the fire of the anti-vaxxers because they are saying the drug companies are only in this for a profit. And so they'll use this, as warped as it might seem, as more fuel for their ability to rail against vaccination.
Well, there's no accounting for conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah.
You can't make law or policy based on what the wackos right. are going to do. And New York State has
thankfully
struck back right. against the anti-vaxxers.
Did you say wackos?
Yeah, I think anti-vaxxers ought to go
they're nuts.
Right straight to jail.
Yeah.
I think they're endangering the population. And I think that their complaints about bad medicine can be handled as bad medicine. Let's fix it, not stop vaccinations, which, again, is something that mankind has worked for years to get to a point that we can stop
major
diseases. But
just extraordinary success.
It's a wonder. We should be celebrating. We used to celebrate it. What happened?
Okay,
now
so then,
it's
but just
bad.
Wait for Robert
Crazy.
Kennedy's next statement.
I know. He's one of them.
Yeah. So then you have the issue of whether or not this is the drug companies are killing themselves in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. they're doing this great work that you're pointing out,
right.
And yet, for the sake of profit, they go ahead and they do something they shouldn't be doing.
You know, look, you cannot blame a company, especially in this country where capitalism is king, for wanting to make a profit and satisfy their shareholders.
Shareholders.
That
right.
is their duty.
It's pressure
it's
from shareholders.
Government that's supposed to say, whoa,
yes.
you've gone too far.
mm-hmm.
So this blaming pharma is, that's not my intent. I blame the government.
Dear Rosemary.
Point. Rosemary,
dear,
very good point.
I think it's a very bad point. And
God, he's annoying. I forgot it. You're here right next to me now.
Yeah, you can't punch.
I won't.
But you're right. Obviously, that you know the profit is king and all the rest of it. But there has to be some inherent understanding that you can't do this stuff. Hence, a lawsuit, which could cost these drug companies billions of dollars.
But it didn't cost them billions. That's what I'm saying.
Not
if
yet.
You want to hurt them, you got to make them pay. And that did not happen this time. I don't see it
but
happening
it's
in the
still their problem. Yes, Libby.
I think what you're going to see, and there's an article in The Guardian this morning, is, okay, they won't be able to sell those drugs here. They'll sell them in the third world. They'll sell them sell them in India.
Just like the tobacco
other
companies.
That's right.
Did.
They'll do the same thing with the tobacco company. They'll maintain their
you know,
profits.
We used to think, remember, this was the financial industry, too, that we don't have to regulate them because, you know,
right.
it's self-preserving. You're not going to do something like kill your customers.
Yeah, well.
And yet the tobacco industry had no problem doing that. Farm has no problem doing that. The financial industry did engage in practices that were incredibly destructive to themselves.
Right when radio does it.
There's also mm-hmm. the sugar industry. Think about that.
I'd also say that not every pharmaceutical company has opiate products. I think it's a few pharmaceutical companies have.
So what's your point? Big ones. What's your point?
Well, you don't want to paint the whole industry with a brush of a couple bad actors.
Yeah, I'll go back to what Rosemary was saying. We have benefited so much from the extraordinary research and success of pharmaceuticals, measles was almost gone.
Yes, you know? It should be gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it's
Black Plague.
It's true. We have reached a point. We have done an amazing thing. We've extended lifespans for almost a whole population. And what do we do? What's our reaction to it? Oh, man. It's one of the reasons I'm depressed these days.
More letters.
So, thank you, Joe. Sorry. Michael says, Rosemary's right. Uh-oh.
I like that.
Opium is a blessing for mankind. I'm a retired nurse who worked in critical care and have seen morphine take terrible pain from new post-op patients. I don't blame the drug companies for its abuse. Michael.
Oh, well, I agree with you up to that last point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The wide availability of that drug, the ease with which it could be prescribed is definitely a factor in its abuse.
Shall I move on, Joe?
Please, sir.
Okay, and then Eric says, drug settlement. Good morning, folks. I've spent the last decade watching my best friends die from this epidemic. I've watched as their parents ceaselessly cried over losing a child. I was able to beat the addiction, and it wasn't easy. Addiction robbed me of years of my life. The ruling is an insult to all of us fighting this war. $500 million is a drop in the bucket. Shame, Eric, in Kingston. Okay. And then finally, another Eric, the brilliant director, Eric, FDA and opioids. Good morning, panel. Help me understand why the FDA isn't being held accountable for allowing these companies to push these drugs. The drug companies send in their team of Harvard PhDs to the scientists at the FDA, who all want to work for the drug companies and make millions instead of protecting us. Apparently, they just rubber stamp them along. What's up with that? Thanks. Eric from Richmond.
Well, an interesting parallel. It was the aviation companies that sent in their experts to the FAA that got the 737 MAX approved. I mean, we're letting these companies regulate themselves, and this is one of the consequences.
But, Mike, doesn't that also, and I'll defer to Libby on this because she's my Trump expert, but doesn't that also deal with the signal that is coming to the regulating agencies from the top?
Oh, yes. Sure, you can say that, but this did not begin with Trump.
No, did not.
I mean, the other thing, too, is how much does the FDA oversee marketing of these products?
They obviously oversee the
I mean, you can oversee the drug and what it does, and does it or does it not alleviate the pain, and is it safe? And then, as far as the actual marketing and regulation of how it's dispensed,
you know, Roselle and I sit there and watch the drug commercials.
One ad after another.
And we say, we never take this because they make them put in all the possible. That's the justification for
the advertising. And people don't warning care. The public of the consequences, but before you get that warning about it may cause suicide and kill you.
You see a woman in a bathing suit.
You see people enjoying vacations
or beautiful
exotic places.
They garden
hot tub.
They garden. Yeah.
What shows are you watching where you get these, Alan?
Always the news, right?
No, first of all, if you're old like I am.
You watch TV all the time.
You watch things early in the morning like Gunsmoke. And you know.
And they know only old people are up watching.
They do know that. They do know that. And there are all of these people, hawking these drugs and saying their elbow and they have stuff hurting and the rest of it. But they always have at the end all the list of reported.
That is the requirement.
I know that, Mike.
Gives them the excuse.
I know that. But what's interesting about it is I watch it and I say, who in the world would take this drug with all of those reported, problems?
But those people look so happy.
Yeah, well, because it's raining. It's always raining at the beginning of the commercial, and then it's sunny at the end.
The sun comes out, and they're walking in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, it's sunny when they start telling you that the pill may actually burn through your hand.
Yeah. The other part of it is that they create drugs to deal with maladies that no one ever heard of before, like restless leg syndrome. Who ever heard of that before they started advertising
it?
My
brother had it, though.
You
my
know,
brother
it's,
had it.
It's insane. It's, yeah. They create the need.
Separate bed.
They create the need instead of the need creating the drug.
Okay, this is the most hilarious conversation we have had on the roundtable in
well,
about
and I
2 months.
Feel, I
That's
feel
because
bad.
You're back.
I feel bad that we have to stop for a moment, but don't worry. We'll have more fun, I'm sure, right after this. Wow. Are you all fit to be on the radio right
that
now?
That was the best break we've ever had, really.
You, as a fundraiser,
I don't know.
You
Mike's smoking
it.
A cigarette. Yeah. Go ahead.
You should sell access to the break discussion.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, really good.
Do you want more letters?
Oh, please.
Sure.
For God's sakes, help us out.
Okay, Sandra says opioid cases. Now they treat the opioid epidemic with more opioid, DRT or MAT, just more opioids. The companies will just settle to put the dollars into drug treatment, in quotes. Then they put $1 billion in and get $3 billion out. People come out of drug treatment on more drugs than they went in on. Is that true? It's like Chris Rock said, they don't want you to stop taking drugs. They want you to stop taking drugs that make brown people rich and start taking drugs that make white mm-hmm. people rich. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
What? Do you want to say something?
No.
You looked like you were about to say something.
I was thinking things.
You looked pregnant. Okay. And then John said, opioid responsibility. As the 60 Minutes expose showed, as well as the recent findings in the courts of Oklahoma, there's a lot of blame to go around. I've yet to hear anyone ask about what responsibility the state government had in all this. Someone allowed all those pain clinics in Florida. Someone allowed all those opiates to be shipped into Oklahoma and other states. Every state has a licensing bureau with regulations, and they should have acted. And that's John from Valley Forge. Falls.
All right.
And then Danny says, prisons. It's heartbreaking to me that this giant drug conglomerate will simply have to pay fines. While tens of thousands of lives were ruined by the war on drugs, people doing 10, 15, 20 years from mandatory minimums for marijuana, and no one will actually do any prison time from Big Pharma.
Very true.
And Mark says, opioid settlement. It's a little long. 20 years ago, the discussion we were having is very different than the one we're having today. In the late 1990s, there were studies indicating we were doing a poor job treating pain. This resulted in a fourfold increase of opioid prescribing from 1999 to 2014. Our current situation is partly an unintended consequence of this, although there were malintent by some players such as Purdue Pharmaceuticals and the Sackler family. And then it goes on and on. So I'm sorry, you got to keep these letters short. Make the point short. As Dwight David Eisenhower said, no more than one paragraph, please. Okay.
Eisenhower said that.
Oh, Eisenhower was famous for having people give him very short memos, which have the point. And he was right.
Trump beat him.
He doesn't read any.
Yeah, no memos. Yeah. Pictures are okay sometimes.
And Robert says, good morning, panel. In April, my partner died at home with hospice overseeing the process. I'm sorry. Once the nurse had declared his death, all opioid pain medications in the house were destroyed using dish soap, so they were unable to be used. I did not even have the option to take them to the police station, which I was planning to do with all remaining drugs. Before this proactive move was taken, just an example of how dangerous these drugs are, that they are destroyed in this manner to avoid the possibility of abuse. Well,
they are powerful drugs, and properly destroying them when they're no longer needed is customary.
I would, it's because they're so
the
valuable.
The show does that, huh?
I hope nobody takes this the wrong way. But. I think that the chain of evidence, considering how valuable these drugs are, should be preserved. I remember going to the police station saying, I'd like a receipt for these opioids. They said, we don't give receipts. Now, I found that somewhat troublesome, not because of my particular police station, but because, in general, it's a pretty good idea when something of value is at stake that you watch where it's going.
I agree with you, Alan. That's the first thing I thought about when bringing it to the police station. And not just the, obviously the deaths are horrible, but they're also countless more people that are losing decades off their life by being, you know, by struggling with addiction. And it keeps coming back. I've got friends that keeps coming back. To, even if they don't die, they keep going back to the drug. It's tough.
We have just a few minutes before the top of the hour, so I'll throw in a story here that I think will fit perfectly in a seven-minute slot. How's that? A new national poll suggests that the race for the 2020...
You have Alan talking about polls. You think you can contain that? To
now, here is a beat up on Alan's story.
Yeah. 2020.
Let me get it out.
Let me just say, I thought I could. It'll only take 7 minutes. Hold on. You have a virtual three-way tie, according to the new poll. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. Despite the dead heat, Mr. Sanders and Ms. Warren, each with 20% support among Democratic voters, Mr. Biden with 19%. The poll comes from Monmouth University, released Monday, maybe a hint at a concerning trend for the candidacy of Mr. Biden, the poll's previous frontrunner, whose support declined from 32% when the Monmouth poll was taken in June. But we will remember that there was a poll just last week that showed Biden with over 30% and the other two trailing mightily.
Oh, I'd like to take a turn at this.
Please start us off.
Here's the way I see it. The Democrats are so ticked off at Donald Trump that they want somebody who is extremely aggressive. Now, I think that the most brilliant play here is by Elizabeth Warren, my senator. And the reason is that she is now making a pitch, and this is in contradistinction, my favorite word, to Bernie Sanders. Because Bernie Sanders is basically a political revolutionary, whereas Elizabeth Warren is making the point again and again to the party insiders that I want the Democratic Party preserved, I want to keep going, and I'm going to do that.
Interesting.
And that is a very smart move.
She's
on her,
a real Democrat.
Yeah, that's a very smart move on her.
Interesting.
And I want to attract moderates and progressives together to create a coalition.
And she can. She can.
I was introduced to her, by the way, by Richie Neal, who is not regarded as the most left wing of the Democratic congressman. I love the guy, but he is not. I have to say, I think where we're going is that Elizabeth Warren is going to do extremely well. And from a personal perspective, I want to apologize to all of you who will be writing me letters saying, "See, we told you, Joe Biden isn't it." But game isn't over yet, nor do
oh,
I...
Oh, it's not at all.
No.
And that's the game is over for Joe Biden, but the game isn't over.
No, it's not necessarily.
No, not even for Joe 100%. Biden.
But it looks troubling for Joe Biden.
It does, and it should.
So that's when the game is over, when everybody agrees that it looks troubling.
Yeah, but it's troubling for Trump at this point in the 2016.
It's troubling.
Right.
It should be troubling. He has not performed well.
Well,
it's
that
simple.
That was just one of the questions I was going to ask is, has he had a good day yet? It seems that Biden.
Yeah,
just
when
hasn't...
he announced Joe, and he came in with huge goodwill and name recognition
and money,
and
I would argue that the announcement was botched. The announcement had all the touchy feely stuff. He made the video. That didn't work either. No one's
takeoff was as bad as Elizabeth Warren, and she has come back in a very short period of time.
Well, that's what I mean, and she has several points. I mean, there are speeches that she has made in Iowa that have gone viral, that people have picked up on. And all I'm not saying anything
now,
about the decline of Joe Biden. I'm just asking has there been a great moment for him as the front runner?
But what is his philosophy? His philosophy is, we have this crazy man in the White House. What I have to do is show stability, and I'm going to show stability by the way that I conduct myself. He thought that would be enough to carry him through. Apparently not.
Yeah, I Joe Biden made the point, and he's right, although I hope he's not, that it's way early. These polls are not really indicative of a whole lot because we're so far out and there's so many candidates, and that will winnow. The field is going to change and the numbers are going to change just as people continue to drop out.
And
that's not to be overlooked.
Joe Biden's using poll numbers in his TV commercials.
He shouldn't be. I mean, he's doing it because people like Alan. we do use poll numbers. We should not. What they really mean Yeah, I think that we're a little crazy about polls.
If you go a little
the
bit
trends,
deeper,
though, let me just, the trends are clear. Biden is getting unpopular. His static, which I think was a tactic, is not popular. Elizabeth Warren is on fire. She has what no one else does in that Democratic field, which is excitement. The stuff that Bernie had in the last election seems to be
That's
going to
true.
Elizabeth
I mean,
Warren.
Although she and Bernie are equal in terms of their numbers.
And Bernie knows this, too. And I think you're right. He is a revolutionary, but he has realized he's got to talk more solid this time than he did last time. And I've been impressed first with his environmental program, and now he has a program about journalism, which is pretty interesting.
And between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, she can make the case that I am more electable. Electability is still extremely important to Democratic voters, but she also has the progressive, credentials that Biden doesn't really have.
Yeah, she's something new. I think that even though Bernie's a revolutionary and there's many favorable aspects that you just cited, Rosemary, she's somebody new. He's been around. Biden's been around.
Right.
Sanders has been around. Biden has been around. She's kind of the new fresh face. And if Sanders does wane, it's going to all benefit her.
I agree. But the point in this is that I would. It's not Joe Biden who should be worried at this point. It's Kamala Harris. It's Cory Booker, who have not caught on fire. And then everybody else beneath. They're out. They're the ones who I would say, yeah, they're definitely
out.
But we have three contenders at this point. And I
hope all three are on the same stage.
Were you going to say something?
Thank
mean?
Goodness. Well, I was because we were talking before about the new millionaire.
Steyer.
Yeah, I keep wanting to say
employer.
Yeah, billionaire. Yeah. How he is buying into the rules so that he can get on that. Yeah. I don't know how to count him in this calculus. But to me, it seems like from the old polls, there's three who are contending.
I'll tell you how to count
contending.
Them. Count him out.
Count him out?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing about this guy, even though a lot of people agreed with him on the impeachment issue, which he thought he would ride to victory, that was his, he was trying to individualize that for himself. It really hasn't worked. And now you get a sense with this guy. He's just trying to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Panel@WAMC.org. When we come back, we'll wrap up the G7 and talk about other stuff as well. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 27th day of August, 5 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Libby Post make up the panel.
Huge.
We welcome your letters. Indeed. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan, do you have new letters there?
I do, Joe, and I'm glad you asked. All right, here we go.
Me too.
Jeff from Pinebush writes, drug companies are rarely our friends, even though they often supply some essential services. They are in it for the money, and you, as a dependent user, are that source. I understand restless leg syndrome is typically just a magnesium deficiency, often from drinking too much coffee. Uh-oh. I'm surprised more on the panel don't have it. Just kidding. Let's join the rest of the developed world and have universal health care. That's from Jeff.
Let the record show that Mike let his leg go and why we were laughing, and I apologize for that.
John says, drugs. Good morning, panel. No two roads to drug addiction are the same, and there is no one-size-fits-all solution. For many, the opioids are a symptom of other problems. The drug is an off switch. But I am glad that the drug companies who have exploited this sad situation are being brought to task. From James, who writes at the top, importance, hi. Read this letter. Okay. I find it interesting that one of your panel members is so quick to dismiss a condition that they were not aware of as a condition created by the drug industry. My spouse suffers from restless leg syndrome, and it interrupts her sleep, and on occasion, my sleep. She has a mild case of it, but many have dramatic symptoms, and that's James from Westfield, Massachusetts. And then Peggy writes, Dear panel, I suffer from RLS, restless leg syndrome. I did not
this
know.
This is all the letters are going to be about now.
I did not know.
Sorry, folks.
Until I could not get to sleep because my legs were twitching with an inner leg creepy crawly feeling. If I didn't take the pill each night, the symptoms return. It is real and horrible. Thank goodness there's a drug to calm it. And coincidentally, my father suffers from this as well. Thanks for your wonderful discussions. And that's from Peggy in Woodstock.
I'm sure that there are people that have this. Clearly Peggy does and her dad does.
And my brother does.
And your brother does.
Yeah.
The issue is the drug companies take these maladies that are not, it's not like everyone has it. It's not like cancer is a threat to everybody. It's, you know, it's not like Alzheimer's, which impacts so many people. I'm not saying, and I'm not trying to minimize this, but they use this as a marketing tool to sell these drugs where they may not necessarily be needed. That's the issue.
Okay. And then Hallie writes drugs. Well, I think the opiate epidemic is a significant problem. You have to understand the backstory. A number of years ago, there was a big push by regulators to treat pain as the fifth vital sign. Anybody know that reference?
No.
Okay. Anyway, there were lots of metrics that doctors were expected to meet with regards to treating pain. Unfortunately, the patient population has become less tolerant of having any discomfort. So opiates were used and perhaps even pushed by the medical establishment to eradicate and diminish pain as much as possible. And that's from Hallie, MD. All right. You know, the thing that does occur to me is that there are some docs who have become prescribers, in quotes. In other words, tons and tons. You knew you needed it. For example, let me give you an analogy which is inappropriate, but I'll use it anyway.
Oh,
but
no.
Well, sign us up.
As you know,
I was surprised.
You go to the head of the line at some of the marijuana dispensaries if you have a medical note. So there are some doctors who are now specializing in medical notes. Now, I think that may be good, to be honest with you. Are you know what I'm talking about? No.
But yeah, yes. But so we what? I mean, does that mean more people will go to that doctor?
Yes.
Is that what you're trying
Absolutely.
To say?
Absolutely. No. All the drug addicts know who the good prescribers are to get the drugs, of course.
Well, okay. But it's also fair to say that there are doctors who understand the value of, I took my first CBD the other day, and my back pain went away. Hey, I don't know whether that's going to be forever, but it certainly helped a lot. Well, you're looking at me very strangely.
Well, I have back pain, so I'm thinking maybe I should go to the head of the line.
Did you take it?
Otherwise.
Well, what'd you say?
Did you take it in a pill form?
I've taken it three times under my tongue.
Under your tongue? Oh, you did the tincture.
And now it's just a matter of dosing.
Right.
Okay.
If you get a prescription, do you also get the marijuana for free?
No.
You have to pay.
Why would you get it for free?
You get a lot of prescriptions are paid for by your health care coverage now.
Well, the insurers do not recognize.
Right.
They can't. So,
yeah. They can't.
They can't because of
understood.
Right. And you have to go with cash because it's a cash business.
Understood.
And pay a gigantic tax.
Well, I know that Great Barrington, Massachusetts, I think I've said this before a few times, but Great Barrington in the first 7 months, because of the tax on the marijuana joint, one out of the five that have been licensed in Great Barrington created $1 million excess for Great Barrington. $1 million, 7 months. So, unfortunately, they can't spend it yet because it hasn't been properly appropriated at the town meeting. But you can imagine who will have their hands out looking for that money when it happens. Me, I'd love to see a new high school built. Anyway, Eugene Fleischman. Oh, I shouldn't do the last name. Eugene says, restless leg syndrome. I'm one of the many millions of people who suffer from restless syndrome. While this is not a terminal disease, this condition deprived us from being able to sleep at night, which does lead to serious illness. I'm one of the many who take very low dosage of methadone, which has allowed me to sleep at night. Dosage is well below the amount that is addictive. Yep. And Stephen says, no, not primarily about aggressiveness. Warren's rise is about structural change and the likelihood that she won't pivot if elected. Could be. You know, the interesting thing about Warren is, you know, she didn't get that much really favorable publicity. It's just as if people knew that she was the one. And so she's had these great numbers from day one. Well, and as you know, we know that Trump is worried about her because of the continued reference to Pocahontas, which he is not going to let go.
But the other thing is that she took up the mantle of the liberal lion that Ted Kennedy left.
Right.
And she's a national figure. There are some of us who would like to see her stay in the Senate because she could
be so effective
there. And if the Dems take the Senate, I mean, she could really run the table in terms of economic policy and making some real structural changes. But she could do the same in the presidency as long as she's got the executive ability to do it. I mean, that's the thing. There's a difference between being a legislator and being an executive.
Well, but you know, it's damn well about time that we had a woman as president.
Absolutely.
Of the United States.
I totally agree with you. And if she's the nominee, I'll be right there.
Elizabeth Warren did not have great numbers from the start. She had terrible numbers. And the crowds that she is getting now are a new phenomenon. The TV has been talking about it just in this past week. And she has done that town hall by town hall. She has done it the old grassroots way.
Well, you raised one interesting question, Libby. If Elizabeth Warren is the candidate and she's elected, a Republican governor will appoint the person to take her seat, and that will cost the Democrats.
That is correct, Michael.
Yeah. Right.
That's correct, and there will be tremendous pressure on Governor Baker to do that in such a way that the Democrats will lose their advantage that they might get in the Senate.
There are more restless legs than letters.
Okay, here we go.
Just kidding.
For the record.
Much more being written about restless leg syndrome than our candidates for
it's
president.
It's a legitimate ailment that is treatable.
Okay, and Jeannie says, Biden's numbers were high because of name recognition. His numbers are going down because summer is over and people are starting to pay attention. Could be. Could be. I think his misplaying of this is not to give some solace to all of those who need somebody to get in Trump's face. I think that that's a big part of what the Democrats. Now, the interesting thing is you could win. He could lose the Democratic primary, in which case you get a more aggressive person running as a Democrat, and who in turn might, I'm not saying will, might lose some of the purples in the middle. So Biden might be more attractive in terms of presidential electorability than in a Democratic primary.
Oh, absolutely. That's always the possibility where you can win a primary, but you're not electable, or vice versa. You can't win the primary, but if you were the general candidate, you'd win.
Or you lose an election, you would have been a much better president. That happens, too.
Oh, indeed.
And Ruth writes, Democratic primaries. I heard Senator Michael Bennet on the Commonwealth Club on WAMC, thank you, and I like him. I wish he got more airtime because I think he could appeal to those middle-of-the-road Trump voters who are sick and are afraid of the socialism they see in Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
You'd like Michael Bennet.
Beating Trump is job one, and I think Bennet would do it. What do you think? We've just discussed that.
Michael Bennet is the education commissioner in Colorado. Is that right? Or what's his?
Beats the hell.
He's Colorado.
He's a U.S. senator.
Oh, he's a U.S. senator.
He's a senator.
Right.
Oh,
okay. He came up as the education
commissioner. Right. And he's dropped out, hasn't he?
No.
Hickenlooper. He's not going to make it into the debate, and he gave a whiny little speech about how the rules are unfair.
Well, did you say a whiny little speech?
Yes, I did.
That's kind of the other news that comes out of this Monmouth poll, is that both de Blasio and Gillibrand, our home state favorites, were trying to get to qualify for this final debate, and because of the Monmouth poll, it looks like neither of them are going to now qualify for this upcoming debate.
Correct.
Yeah, you need, what do you need, 4 or 5 polls, something like that?
They need 2%. They couldn't
get
it.
But you also have to have a certain number of polls.
2% and 4 polls, I think, is the rule, and then a certain amount of donors.
The question is, if you don't qualify for the debate, the next round of debates, and tomorrow we'll know the answer to that.
Right.
Is that going to start people dropping out?
Well, they've already started dropping
out. Oh, sure.
That's what Bennet was saying. I'm still going to be in this race. These rules are unfair. You know, I just have
some appeal.
I have a certain disdain for people who accept the rules going in, and then as they're losing, as they're not living up to what's required, then they start complaining about it.
So Bernie, you couldn't Sanders be a candidate unless you agreed to these rules? Well,
you can be a candidate, but you were going to do it without being in the debates. So the rules for the debate were clear and transparent.
That doesn't mean that we're accepted by everybody.
And also, the big question is, do they think that they can maybe qualify for the next debate? Or if there's no hope for the next debate, then I think you'll see a bunch
of. Or do
drop.
You need the debates to run for president? It's not like everybody in America is watching
them. I think you need exposure, and that's where you get it.
Yeah, yeah, Mike, you're right.
Right. Elisa, running for cabinet.
Regular letter writer Lisa writes, "Dear panel, thank you for being there. I disagree respectfully that the poll about the Iowa caucus means that Kamala Harris and Cory Booker are, quote, out. Caucuses reflect white America. Would it be better to have an African-American president to put the racists in their place again?" And that's Lisa from Rochester.
I would love either one of those candidates, let me make clear, but I think both of their candidacies are in trouble.
"Good morning, panel," says Kathleen. "Elizabeth Warren is gaining steady ground. She is drawing big crowds, and I predict she will do very well in the next debate. Senator Warren seems to have momentum now. I'm not sure that Joe Biden has excited those of us who want Trump Trouts." Kathleen from Ellington. And then Lynn says, "Even though I give a small donation to the Warren campaign, there is no way the Midwest is going to go for her. I'm hoping for Biden and Stacey Abrams as vice president."
That's a possibility.
Ooh, that's nice.
What will be interesting is, now that Warren is the perceived maybe front runner, is will these other candidates go at her and attack her this debate and bring out some memorable footage for the TV to play over and over and over again?
Yeah.
It's already starting. Right. I think I saw a piece, was it in the Times or somewhere, about her previous history as a lawyer.
Kamala Harris's or Warren's?
Warren's, I believe. Huh. Yeah. Oh, maybe from a law school. As a law school professor?
Yeah.
I saw that too, yeah.
She was pro-business or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's an old tape, but...
Well, hey, they're going back to junior high school now on some things.
I know.
James says, "Candidates, good morning, panel. It is so disconcerting that the three Democratic frontrunners are all past their sell-by dates. We have to do better. Thank you, Jim in Binghamton."
It's better if used by. It's not sell by. You know.
I love to hear from Binghamton, don't you? Let's hear from Matthew. "Bernie and Warren combined have more than twice Biden's percentage in the polls. By staying in the race, Bernie is splitting the progressive vote, ensuring a Biden victory, something progressives do not want. When will Bernie drop out and endorse Warren? She shares the same policies, but is more electable and has less, and has more detailed policy plans." Well, I don't know about that, but I do know I know Bernie, I've interviewed him. I can't tell you how many times when he was a congressman. He's single-minded. He doesn't drop out.
No, he proved that against Hillary Clinton. I just don't see that happening.
No, against Elizabeth Warren. You just said
I saw him do that against Hillary is what I meant, that he did not concede when it would have been better for the party, better for the country.
Well, let's not forget he's not a Democrat. Let's just not forget that. He's not a Democrat. He's running as an independent on the Democratic line. You know, and he's not a Democrat. If he wants, I said this 4 years ago, if he wants the Democratic nomination, let him join the party and go through the process like everybody else does.
All right, don't be bitter.
He is, though. When you watch him on an interview, he points out polls where he's ahead. He makes a forceful argument, and I don't think he's the best candidate to beat Trump. But when you watch him, you can't help but be impressed by his messaging and his attention to detail. I mean, he's great, I think.
Messaging. Well, I don't want a president who messages. I want a president who acts. And that's the whole problem with Bernie Sanders. He's had decades in government. And the only time I hear great ideas from him is when he's running for president. Why is that?
Well, that's
why?
That's not true. I mean, as I say, I've interviewed him maybe hundreds of times when he was a congressman all those years.
You mentioned that several times.
I have, and I think it's important to mention that, as well as mentioning why I love Elizabeth Warren. But I can tell you, he's always had programs. He's always had things.
He's not gotten any of them through.
Well, come on. Sorry. It's the political reality of the makeup of the two houses and who's ever sitting in in the White House at the time.
Meanwhile, which is interesting why so many congressmen of the Republican stripe are leaving. And and in the Assembly, too, in the Senate, too, where that is also happening because people are saying, if I can't have power, I don't want to be here.
Well, he spent 30 years in Washington or more. And to for that, what does he have to show?
Well, wait a second. Are you saying that Bernie spent 30 years?
For Congress
really?
And Senate,
wow.
Didn't
Time
he?
Does pass fast.
Well, and he was mayor of Burlington.
Yes,
to
and
begin
then,
with.
Then he was...
Then he was a congressman.
Congressman.
And then
a senator.
Yeah.
Right,
an outsider.
There was only one congressman from Vermont.
You see a lot of people on TV as well, these swing voters who say, I was for Bernie, but now I'm going to vote for Trump. Or I'm going to, Trump's my first pick, Bernie's my second
I've
pick.
Always felt that. That's strange. I've always felt that's true. And I'll tell you why. People were desperate in the last election for something different.
It was the anti-establishment.
And the reason that Hillary, I think, didn't do as well as she should have, although she won, was because she was perceived as being establishment, along with her husband, on the speaking circuit, making hundreds of thousands of dollars doing that stuff. I think those were the things that really what are you making?
Bernie faces? Is a millionaire because he wrote a book catering to that same crowd. What, come on.
What do you mean, come on?
And Obama and Michelle are now making I think a I lot
read,
of money.
Bernie also got some from 40, his wife, too.
Yeah,
I think
true.
I read they have 40 million.
The Obamas.
Yeah. Mm. They just put a nice spread on Martha's Vineyard, I believe.
So come, they're not pilloried. And Hillary is. Hillary is pilloried.
Oh, boy.
Oh. All right. Oh, well, boy. Let us, let's wrap
I
up
know.
This.
Ancient history. Okay. I'll give it up. I'm not living in the past.
We never got to the G7. There was so much to talk about there.
There was.
You know, the one thing about the G7 is it seems like our European allies and those in the G7, the other six in the G7, which also includes Japan, I realize, have figured out how to work around or work with Trump. I mean, they know he's either going to be there another year or two or another 6 years, you know. But they see an end, and they know they can go against him on certain things, and he has no choice but to go along with them. And
but it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Yeah,
he can say anything he wants, but it doesn't mean anything.
That's right. They recognize that he can say something on Friday, like you know, China is our enemy,
which he did in his real estate deals.
On Monday, he can say the opposite and take it all back. Yeah.
I think he ought to be impeached for that whole idea about having next year's G7 at his failing golf course.
Ought to be.
Yeah, well, you know, they have the biggest ballrooms in Florida in that.
And lots of parking, too.
Yeah, and the suites are beautiful in there.
And the bungalows,
and so, you know, even if that doesn't happen, even if it's an idea that rightly does not float any higher than it, he's already in violation, I think, of the Constitution because he did a free commercial, an international commercial for his private business.
Rosemary Mayo with the last word. Thank you all.
Oh, no. Okay.